Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Obladi Oblada. The Beatles, released on this day in 1968. I'm Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're going to have a conversation about this presidential race. And we are joined here in studio by Dr. Malia Cromer, who is director of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center and assistant professor in the Department of Political Science and International Relations at Goucher College. Good to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having
Welcome.
Me.
And Phil Tran's in studio, political consultant and CEO of Phil Tran Public Relations, LLC. Fair to say a Republican activist? Is that fair to say?
Fair enough.
Fair enough. I want to make sure I'd like to be fair on the show.
Yes.
And our dear friend Edward Wyckoff Williams, contributing editor at The Root Political, political contributor and special correspondent with Al Jazeera, columnist, political analyst who appears on MSNBC, ABC, CBS Washington, National Syndicated Radio, and of course here on The Mark Steiner Show. Good to have you back, Edward.
A pleasure to be back, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number. You can also tweet me at Mark Steiner, write to us here at talk@steinershow.org, log on to our Facebook pages, but if you can, do call in with your thoughts on this presidential race at 410-319-8888. So there's a lot of places to start, but I have two things I do want to start with, and the first is on the Republican side of this race, and the race is really interesting to me. I mean, there's really the field of candidates that have decided to run, and those who may run the Republican side actually takes pages. I'm just kidding. It's a long list. Mm-hmm. But one of the people who entered the race, we know, is Donald Trump, and has made these kind of outrageous statements and shot up in the polls immediately. Much of the chagrin, I think, of many people in the Republican Party and Republican leadership, and some of the other candidates as well, Mr. Bush specifically. And so what is this phenomenon, and why do we think that he has gotten so much traction when he was almost also ran the last time he did it? And Phil, what is it? What's going on in the Republican world?
I think Donald Trump is just catching on with the Republican electorate right now because he speaks without a filter, and he's not beholden.
That's for sure.
That is true. And he's also not beholden to any certain wing of the Republican Party. He's not beholden to Tea Party activists. He's not beholden to the establishment, or what I like to call the cocktail party wing of the GOP. He is a billionaire. He doesn't have to owe anybody anything for where he's at right now. So he has the ability to speak without a filter. And whether you agree with him or disagree with him on certain points, that is something that's very attractive to the electorate.
So what wing would you put him in, Edward?
There are a couple of things here. I think, one, he does know his audience. I think there is a large segment of the Republican base who are xenophobic and therefore respond in kind to the kind of comments he made about Mexicans and Mexican-Americans. But I also think Donald Trump is it's sort of like Kim Kardashian in a way, a part of the zeitgeist of the moment. We live in this digital age. We live in the Twitterverse and in Facebook world, and where sound bites matter and celebrity trumps everything, quite literally. And I actually didn't mean to use that pun, but it does. And I think that his celebrity, on top of the fact that he has no filter, and he's speaking to the least common denominator within the Republican Party, is the reason why we've seen him jump up in the polls. But that said, I think we are all clear that he has no chance at a national election, but he does have a chance to continue to build his brand by any means necessary, and he's shown that he's willing to do that, to the point that Anderson Cooper is going to give him an interview tonight, which makes no sense to me. Hasn't he said everything we don't want to hear already?
Malia? Oh.
I think this is really interesting. With to keep in mind that we are pretty far out from the first primary. So the thing that Donald Trump has over a lot of the other candidates is just name recognition. So when people are responding to these polls, they are responding to the people that they know best. And he's a brand. He's a name. And another thing with the Republican electorate, they are always looking for this business Republican, somebody who's successful in business, not a Washington insider, but somebody who has made it on their own, pulled themselves up by their bootstraps. And this is who really Trump exemplifies in a lot of people's minds. Whether that's true or not, in actuality, is another kind of conversation in terms of his past business practices. But at the end of the day, he's committed to the media cycle, he's top on name recognition, and he represents a business-savvy candidate.
So having said all that, I think I agree that Donald Trump is going nowhere as a candidate eventually. I mean, he's just kind of spouted up right here. Do you agree with that, Phil?
Before I answer that question, one thing I just want to clarify is that a lot of the anger and hysteria against Donald Trump is due to the misconception that he was speaking about all immigration, when really he was pointing out illegal immigration. And I think that just is a huge distraction, because I think a good discussion about illegal immigration is something that we need to have in this presidential campaign. Recently, the Center for Immigration Studies provided a statistic and said that 15% of the jail population in America comprise of non-citizens. So, yes, it was really inarticulate the way that Donald Trump presented it. Probably he said it the way he said it because he didn't want to speak with a filter, and also it gets certain people riled up. But let's not try to get distracted with that. And then,
well, except but wait a minute. Let me just throw out here. I mean, yeah. and you can jump in, Malay, and then and go to Edward. But I mean, let me just. This is the quote. Well, if you look at the statistics of people coming in, you look at the statistics on rape, on crime, on everything else, on everything coming in illegally into this country, it's mind-boggling. And kind of putting all this kind of stuff, well, somebody's doing the raping. I mean, somebody's doing it. Who's doing the raping? Who's doing the raping? And saying it's Mexican immigrants that are doing the raping. And Malia, I think that's the part that has people right.
Well, I think in general, and I think the point's well taken about illegal immigration versus legal immigration. But that being said, if you look at public opinion polls and you look over time, there has been a certain shift in the American electorate. People are now more in favor of this pathway to citizenship. And so if Donald Trump was able to perhaps temper his comments with a discussion about immigration reform, not just vilifying illegal immigrants, that perhaps maybe would have – it's again, what he said was terrible, I think, in a lot of ways. But if he could temper it by talking about a pathway to citizenship, talking about reducing the amount of illegal immigration, it would have most likely went over a lot better.
Edward?
I completely agree. I'm bored of Donald Trump at this point.
Yeah, we're leaving that discussion just 2 seconds. You have to finish.
I was a little confused by, was it Robert who was speaking about, let's not get it confused that he's really
Phil.
Talking about immigration? No, he was not talking about immigration. What he did was tantamount to someone in the South pre, let's say, 1965, getting on television and saying, these niggers are raping our women. That's what he was doing. He was inciting the worst in people who hold those kinds of beliefs in this country, and he was directing it specifically at Mexicans and people of Mexican descent. There is nothing inarticulate about that. That is pure racism and xenophobia. That's what that is.
So, I think that has kind of set the rest of the Republican candidates into a different place when you see now with Jeb Bush trying to become the cerebral candidate.
Yes.
Right?
Which is really problematic because I think that these decisions are being made at very high levels within the Republican hierarchy to almost manipulate the media in order to place people like Bush and, let's say, Chris Christie at the top of the field just because they don't seem so extreme, even though the policies will still be the same that they'll promote. And so it's interesting that they have crowded the field, which is where you started this conversation.
Right.
Why are there so many of them? There are so many of them because they've already chosen their candidate.
Who you think is Jeb Bush?
It's going to be Jeb Bush or Chris Christie.
Right. Any disagreement with that here on this panel?
I think it's too early to tell. Crazier things have happened.
I would agree. I mean, I'm really waiting for me to see how Scott Walker does. I think he's another interesting candidate to think of. Another thing Republican voters really like is executive experience. And I think he's certainly somebody to watch. I do think Chris Christie's time perhaps has passed. If you look at his approval ratings back in New Jersey, they're terrible. But Scott Walker, his approval ratings aren't as bad. And he has this kind of anti-union flavor about him that I think could appeal to a wide range of Republican voters.
So one of the things about this race, I'm going to go to the Democrats for a moment here, and where you see Lincoln Chafee, Hillary Clinton, Martin O'Malley, Bernie Sanders, and now Jim Webb in the race. And one of the things that's interesting to me, and I want to hit this part first, looking at some of the articles I've been reading recently about the race and the question of race, Hillary Clinton ran the last time, really kind of pulling in the white voters to her campaign and to vote for her during this primary. And Barack Obama came exploding out in 2008 as a candidate that many people on the Democratic side of the equation and many people who might lean Democratic were looking for. Young, black, dynamic, something different with some hope, as his campaign slogan was. But now you're seeing something really interesting happen. You're seeing that in some of the polls I've been reading that Hillary Clinton is getting fewer less support from white voters, more support from non-white voters, and you're seeing Bernie Sanders is taking the progressive position, actually getting less support from non-white voters in this primary, and the Democrats cannot win unless different communities of people of color in this country, specifically in the Mexican American world, Puerto Rican world, in the black world, the Native world, vote Democratic. And there's no excitement there right now. So what about that? This is a piece of the campaign, I think, that we've not too many people have touched on, but I think it's going to be fundamental to whoever wins the primary and fundamental to who can possibly win the general election, Edward.
Yeah, I mean, you're dead on there. I was reading an article, I think, on The Nation or something like that, New Republic, talking about this very issue that Hillary Clinton in particular, has been specifically focused on the black and brown vote more so than she was in 2008. But that's also because she and her campaign see the changing of the tide, right? Barack Obama won because of his rainbow coalition, and then he won again because of it. And we see that rainbow coalition just growing in this country. And that's just not around issues of race, but sexuality, with the progressive agenda being so much driven, I think, by LGBT rights. And so if you can corner that market, you can win. But you do need white progressives supporting you. And I think that a part of Hillary Clinton's problem, it seems, with, let's say, the rise of Bernie Sanders, because there really is energy there. A lot of people doubted him at first, but there really is some energy there, is that she's still seen as a part of the past. Like, she's so tied to the past that I think it's very hard for a lot of young people, let's say, to get on board as seeing her as being somebody who represents their future. The good thing for her, though, is that she is a woman. There has not been a woman president, and I think there are a lot of women in this country and a lot of progressive men in this country who would like to see that moment happen.
Please, jump in.
Well, right now, I see Hillary Clinton's campaign is one that is very, very uninspiring and so extremely cautious that if I were Hillary, I would be fearful of taking the wrong strategy in the opposite direction. Because in the 2008 campaign was all about promoting the front runner status, inevitability. And then now, I think she's trying to learn a lesson from 2008, but as time goes on, we may see she might be taking it too far in the opposite direction and just trying to stay low and not really get anybody excited.
A part of that, I think, might be the fact that, like someone else mentioned, this is still a year and a half away. This is an election that's still a year and a half away. And I think in a lot of ways, she has remained muted out of respect for President Obama. Presidency, almost, to not try to sort of run a shadow government or a shadow campaign in that way. I think that, if anything, she probably has a plan to ramp it up, but in time, particularly when she gets people like Obama and Joe Biden on the campaign trail with her, she'll have far more energy and far more momentum at that point if she becomes the nominee. But I think now she's doing the groundwork, and her team are doing the groundwork. But I agree with you, there is something stale and muted here that is unexciting. And I think that that's why people like me, at least, I wanted to see someone like Julian Castro get in the race. I want to see somebody youthful, vibrant, brown, that sort of can take the mantle from Obama in that way, because that's the direction of the electorate, and that's the direction that the country is moving in.
I don't think there's anything not vibrant about having a first female president.
I agree with you. I agree.
So, and you know, I think
there are others who could be that. Elizabeth Warren being one.
Sure, and she's again has stated time after time she's unwilling to get in the race. And the thing about Hillary Clinton is, and I think this is really interesting, if you look back during the so-called Obama coalition, it's not that black voters didn't like Hillary Clinton. They just preferred Barack Obama to her. And if you look at polls now, she's doing really well with the African-American community. So she is pulling from that that quote-unquote Obama coalition. You know, and I think what's really interesting about Bernie Sanders is we have this, he, for some reason, people view him as having this monopoly to talk about income inequality. Well, there's one thing that Hillary Clinton can certainly talk about in terms of income inequality, and that's the role that women play. So women are certainly disadvantaged economically to their male counterparts, and she can speak to this in a way that Bernie Sanders cannot. And so this idea that she's not exciting, well, look at her fundraising. She must be exciting somebody.
People with lots of money, she's exciting.
But she's gotten a lot of small ticket donations as well. It's not just the big donors. It's a lot of small ticket donors as well. And she's really inspiring for women. So her numbers are off the charts for women across the country. So the fact that she's not inspiring, I just think, is incorrect.
Well, let me go to the phones here. I mean, people have written some things in. Let me go to chat here, then we'll go to the phones. Leo, you're the first caller up at 410-319-8888. You're going to come to your call right here. But we had a chat come in here from G., saying, also talking about Hillary Clinton, she got a little dog whistle racist in 2008 when she was running against Obama, and now she needs to be acceptable to black and brown people. That did become an issue in 2008 when she started making these comments that appeared pretty.
Well, her people did start the whisper campaign about Barack Obama's heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And her husband was the one who said that even Jesse Jackson had won the South Carolina primary. So, and let's not
right. That's right. I remember that. Right.
Clinton is a Southerner himself, and a part of that tradition of the older Democratic Southerners that were still buddies with their Republican counterparts. And so, there is that. But I think that she's far enough away from that time-wise. That won't be held against her, particularly by black people, I think, because they realize that if a Republican wins, they're far more disadvantaged. At the end of the day, they're gonna have to vote for who's ever at the top of the Democratic ticket.
Let me open the phones here. What do you think about this race coming 16 months down the road? But it's hot, heavy in the news. We want to hear your thoughts on it, where you feel and stand about it. We have two candidates from the state of Maryland on either side of the parties running for President of the United States, Ben Carson and Martin O'Malley, 410-319-8888. Leo, in Bolton Hill, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Martin.
Good morning, Leo. How are you?
I am wonderful, and good morning to all your guests and everyone in Radio Land. I don't underestimate Donald Trump. I don't think he's going to get elected, but don't underestimate his appeal to bigotry and racism. He is an unabashed racist, and as your guests have indicated, he's inflaming people in ways that are negative, but it makes them feel better. As for Martin O'Malley, I hope and pray he doesn't get to a cabinet seat in the White House. That's my hope. I think Martin O'Malley has been a disastrous governor and someone who is certainly Mr. Zero Tolerance in the state of Maryland. He is not a progressive from my read on justice and fairness, and more needs to be said about Martin O'Malley and his credentials as relates to the black community. So Donald Trump appeals to rich white people, poor white people, and he appeals to some elements in the black community who are anti-Mexican and anti-immigration. So he's going to attract people to the Republican Party, whether we like it or not. We just need to remain vigilant and stay on our toes.
Leo, good to hear from you. And please join us here, 410-319-8888. Yeah, Martin O'Malley so far has had no effect in this race. I mean, I read the article in the Wall Street Journal this morning that said I thought it was a joke at first, but it wasn't. The article was that these people were waiting for Martin O'Malley to show up at their barbecue or in the back lawn, and nobody in the crowd could remember. They said, "We're waiting to meet the Governor O'Malley, but what state was he governor of? Maryland? Virginia? Delaware?" Nobody really knew. But I don't know what that says about this Martin O'Malley campaign, because other people have said this morning to me that the other side of that is that Martin O'Malley may just be biding his time and waiting to see where this race goes and where he can come up the middle as a new, fresh, young voice in the race that could appeal to younger voters. That despite there's negative image with a lot of people in Maryland, that could just be what he's doing, playing his chess game.
Right. So with Martin O'Malley, I think he has a lot of characteristics that if he could get anybody to pay attention to him, that people perhaps nationwide might like. So I think in Maryland, we're basically sick of the shtick, right? We've seen him play the guitar. We've seen him front the band. It's that youthful exuberance that Maryland has already, you know, witnessed and grown tired of. But the rest of the United States hasn't seen it yet. So if he could get somebody to pay attention to him, perhaps he could harness some of that youth vote. But then again, I think that the purpose of this campaign for him, he's a new face and he's a young face, which means in 4 years, in 8 years, he can certainly run again with no problem at all.
That's what it seems to me as well. I think that, I don't, like you and I've talked about this before on air, Mark, I don't know much about him. I know that the Maryland community are almost polarized around him. But it seems that he also suffers from being the average white guy in a world where post the first black president, the average white guy has a harder climb to popularity. And I think it's why people like Trump appeal, because they're characters. You know, Donald Trump is like a member of the cast of the Muppets more than an actual person. And so he's going to get attention because of his orange hair and his no filter talk and all that kind of stuff, and his brashness and boldness, and his brand. Whereas Martin O'Malley is from, he's not that, and he doesn't come from that ilk, and so it's going to be more difficult. But I do agree that if he does bide his time, there might be openings for him in the future, and he could get a cabinet seat, perhaps, in a Hillary Clinton administration, and then, you know, wait and see if he could run again.
Phil, any thoughts on this? You're a Marylander.
Well, I personally am not tired of the personal characteristics of Martin O'Malley, in that, you know, a guitar playing rock and roller. Hey, he's an every man kind of person, and I think that's appealing to him. What I don't find appealing about him, and what a lot of Marylanders don't find appealing about him, and what the rest of America will soon find, is that his legacy in Maryland has been one of tax increases, fee increases, and toll increases at a time when many Americans are not able to afford such increases in their taxes.
Well, you see, I think let's talk about this one. I think America is, folks, join us here with this at 410-319-8888. I think America is very divided on this point. I mean, we are a very split nation. And I think the polls you do and see, Malia, kind of bear that out.
Right. Well, I think it's really, so we talk about Sanders and the socialist message, right? And this is exactly what we're talking about. So socialism costs a lot of money, costs taxpayers a lot of money. So this dream, this kind of Scandinavian dream that Sanders has talked about, with, you know, free health care, free higher education, low income inequality, comes at a cost to taxpayers. And there's one thing Americans really don't like is paying more taxes. So that sort of message, I think, when I think about Sanders as a general election candidate, would just be a total wipeout by whoever that Republican opposition would be, because of this particular stance on, I think, in taxes and what the government should be providing for individuals.
But Edward, I would say at least 25-30% of the voters in this country do lean in that direction.
Wait a minute. What did you say, Mark?
At least 25-30% of voters in America, at the very least, lean in that direction, the direction of Bernie Sanders.
I think maybe that that's often understated, and it's problematic because the progressive voice has been muted by the moderate Democrats, right? I think that, you know, people like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid have done a great job on so many things, but they have capitulated far too much, and I think that there are a lot of progressives who are angry about that, and they want their voice heard, and they want policies to move back to the middle, because we're not even in the middle. I mean, Obama has done his best with health care, but outside of that, there's nothing else really outside of LGBT rights has really been promoted from the far progressive end. And I think that that's what Bernie Sanders represents, and I don't think that he should be discounted.
No, I don't either. I mean, I think that I don't know where this will end up. I mean, anything could happen with Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side at the moment. You've also got Jim Webb, which we'll talk about in a moment in that Democratic race.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, things could implode. I don't think it'll be the kind of the wingnut Benghazi stuff, but I think that it will be internally, whether it's memos, money tied to the Clinton Foundation, things that would come out in that way could possibly really hurt her candidacy, no matter how much money she has.
Well, I think it's really interesting that the conversation, for some reason, surrounding Bernie Sanders is this big quote-unquote surge he has had in the polls, when really the underlying story is that Clinton has maintained a 20-point gap above any of her Democratic challengers,
true,
a consistent 20-point gap. And that is a lot of space being made up in terms of public opinion, 20 points. So as likely as it's good, I think, for have a challenging Democratic primary, I think it's good for all candidates involved to be faced with a challenge. I think it made Obama a better candidate to be challenged by Hillary Clinton. I think the chance of a Bernie Sanders actually pulling it off, maybe he makes it through Iowa and New Hampshire. But then you look at those Super Tuesday states, and he certainly just doesn't, at this point, does not have the coalition to win in those states.
I think that's true.
I think that's true as well. I think, though, to be fair, the fact that she's had a 20-point lead for so long is largely because there's hardly anyone in the Democratic field with anything near her name recognition. We started off talking about Donald Trump and how his brand alone is a part of why he matters in a very crowded Republican field. And I think, to be honest, despite all her accomplishments, and I would never disrespect the fact that she deserves to be in the position she's at, to be running and possibly becoming the first female president, but she's largely there because of name recognition, which started with her husband, not herself. And so I think that if the Democrats came up with another potential candidate that was more like a Barack Obama, she could be defeated again.
Are you both going to want to say something? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to mention something about Bernie Sanders, in that he's not even the ideal candidate 100% with the progressives, because on the issue of guns, he's actually quite conservative for Democratic standards. He's been hammered for his vote to shield gun manufacturers from liability if their guns were used in the commission of a crime, and he has continued to stand steadfast on that position. So, hey, I like people that you can't put in a box. He's not going to, whether I like him or not, and I tend to not like his policies, he is going to take a position based on his own convictions. And that's something that definitely appeals to quite a few people, whether he's going to be able to muster a coalition in order to win the nomination. That remains to be seen.
I think another thing about Clinton, and this is something that I just think is incorrect when people say, is that her name recognition somehow is associated just with her being first lady. She's also been a senator and the secretary of state. So that's the Hillary Clinton that people know, especially this generation, these millennials coming up. They don't know her as the first lady of Arkansas. They don't know her as the first lady of the United States. They know her as Senator Clinton and the Secretary of State.
They do know her as the first lady because Bill Clinton is still one of the most popular politicians ever to have lived. You cannot discount that. And so I'm basically saying that this is a white woman who has done a great deal of good in the world. She has worked very hard. She is very accomplished. But this is a white woman who was married to a white man who got her there. Like, you can't, like, she wouldn't even have been running for Senate had she not been first lady. You can't, I don't know why that's so difficult to admit while still giving her credit for all the other stuff that she's done. But that's how it started. She was married to Bill Clinton.
Well, actually, my philosophy is that had Bill Clinton not married Hillary Rodham, he probably would have never been president.
And that might be true.
So I would say don't blame people for marrying into a power couple. So they're both really accomplished individuals. He had his time to shine as the governor of Arkansas and the president of the United States. And I think that everything Hillary Clinton has accomplished is not just because of her husband. And I think that...
No, I agree with you.
So before we take a brief break, come back. And William, if you can hold on, we're going to get you a call as soon as we come back from this news break. We're about to hit, as we continue to look at the presidential race, have some other issues to bring up. An announcement here that we just got in from Time Magazine, that Governor Jim Gilmore has announced he's running for president, the 20th Republican candidate running for president of the United States. This is now the largest field in a primary ever in the history of the United States. So as of this moment, we thought we'd let you give a piece of breaking news. We'll be right back here. We're hearing I'm Telling You by Freddie and the Dreamers, released on this day in 1963. We'll be right back.
I'm in love with you now. Do you think I'm fooling when I say I love you? I love you. Maybe you'll believe me when I'm finally through, 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 through. I'm telling you now. I know it's been said before. Say you love me and I will be sure.
Nico, who passed away on this day in 1988. I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back here. As we look at this presidential campaign with Edward Wyckoff Williams, editor at the Root, political contributor and special correspondent with Al Jazeera, Dr. Malaya Cromer, director of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center, and professor in the Department of Political Science and International Relations at Goucher College, and Phil Tran, CEO of Phil Tran Public Relations, LLC, and a commentator here in the show as well. 410-319-8888 is the number to join us. Let's go right to the phones, as I promised, and then let's see what emails are coming in. 410-319-8888. William, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning to you.
Good morning, William.
Yes, I was just going through some of my paperwork, and I found an article on the Anglo-Dutch War. There's Admiral Martin Trump. So you all were talking about heritage. So I want to know if Mr. Trump is related to Admiral Trump.
I have no idea.
And also, what advice would he give the Greek government as far as how to emerge from bankruptcy?
I have no idea about that either. I mean, what?
Well, he seems to be an expert at that, so I just want to know how he would help them.
He'd probably just tell them you're fired. So there's a piece that I made a mistake before we went to break. The Time Magazine piece, it was actually yesterday. I thought it was breaking news now when I came across it, but it was from yesterday. But at any rate, Martin O'Malley announced in New Hampshire a national goal of debt-free college for all students within 5 years, covering all in-state public colleges and universities. I mean, he's never been a progressive Democrat, but now he's trying to take that mantle, Edward, in the country, I think, of being the young, brash, progressive Democrat when he's always been a centrist.
I think it's one of those issues that sound really great, and it could possibly get a lot of young people excited, especially young college-educated individuals. But I don't know how realistic that is or how much that should be a centerpiece of any sort of presidential campaign.
Well, I mean, I think it's part. I mean, I think it'd be part of a campaign. There's nobody I know that is either in college or has children in college that aren't crazy with the amount of money it costs to put someone through school. I mean, I think that is a campaign issue. You know, my taxes being a campaign issue, people putting kids through college is a serious campaign issue, and because it's just become so exorbitant and so crazy. I mean,
it is, and it's not. What's interesting about that is that it's not just about financing college education. It speaks to the larger issue of education in this country and how we have not invested enough in education, and it, as a result, means that American workers, American students are falling farther behind their international counterparts. And I think if he can somehow speak to that, he can really challenge Bernie Sanders on the progressive end of the conversation.
Because one of the things Bernie Sanders does not do, before I ask some Republican questions here, and we were talking about this during break, Bernie Sanders seems to have very little appeal to communities of color in this country, to African-American voters, to any voters in the Latino community. Has very, very little appeal. He appeals to younger people who are activists, especially white younger people who are activists. But I read other things he says, and he never mentions race. He never brings those things into the conversation. He doesn't push that issue at all very much. And I think that that's one of his glaring weaknesses in this primary, especially in the Democratic Party primary.
It's probably a function of being a senator from Vermont for most of your entire career. Mm-hmm. There's probably not a lot of opportunities to really speak about racial issues in Vermont.
But you think that somebody like Bernie Sanders would be thinking about that, whether he's representing folks of color or not, right?
Well, it's interesting. I think he's probably, you know, in his own mind, in his own heart, so on the right side of any issues dealing with race that he probably doesn't feel any need to promote that right now. When questioned, he'll always be giving the right answer, I imagine. And I think that he really will find support in black and brown communities. But black and brown communities probably won't come out in full support until there's an actual candidate at the end of the day. So he probably, like you're suggesting, needs to do some work if he's actually going to challenge Hillary Clinton for the actual ticket.
So on the Republican side, what does his race look like to you? I mean, clearly there's Jeb Bush way out in front. But some of the people who are running are clearly just running and they're going no place, like Mike Huckabee and Ben Carson and probably Bobby Jindal and Pataki. And they're just not going to make it. So what is this Republican primary about? What do you think is essentially happening here?
I think Republicans see a golden opportunity to try to win the White House in a year where it's going to be an open seat. And everybody who had any inkling of ambition for the White House is just giving a shot, because in their own mind, they're just thinking, what do I have to lose? I get to be on TV. I get to go places I've never seen before. I can have a lot of fun. And hey, what do you know? I might even be president.
Or you can get a show on Fox afterwards,
right.
Or you can just make a lot of money and speaking fees afterwards. I think a lot of these people do think like that. Someone like Marco Rubio, though, is looking very long-term.
Yes.
I'm actually surprised that more people aren't talking about him. It might be because there is such an anti-Latino sentiment in the Republican Party in general. But I think when he first came to prominence, he seemed far more progressive than he's become as a result of having to kowtow to the Republican Party base. And so it'll be interesting to see how he comes out of this, partly because he probably is the only viable vice presidential candidate for someone like a Jeb Bush or someone like a Chris Christie, if Chris Christie gets there. I find him more fascinating than anyone else really in the race. Partly because I don't think he actually believes in a lot of the rhetoric he espouses, and also because he's the great Latino hope of that party so far.
I'd like to also mention that we are leaving out Ted Cruz, who's another Latino running for president.
Yeah, but he's not. I think he's white identified. I think that he's Canadian, and so there's questions about whether or not he is actually qualified to be president. And he is a character in the same way that. In the same way that Donald Trump is. This man says the most outrageous things, and he's clearly campaigning to get a show on Fox or conservative radio. I think the reason nobody's talking about him is that no one should be talking about him.
Well, my point is that the Latino community is not monolithic. I know Latinos who are supporting Marco Rubio. I even know Latinos who are supporting Ted Cruz just based on the issue positions that he takes. Marco Rubio, I'd like to point out, when he was coming up and he was running for U.S. Senate for the very first time, had a lot of Tea Party support. So he was considered a rock-solid conservative by the activist base. And ever since he's been living and working in Washington, he has actually moderated quite a bit. So I wouldn't say he's a lot more progressive than we think he is. I think he's just... There's a little bit of opportunism in what in how he says things. I do believe that he is generally very conservative, but he will adjust his flavor based on whatever people's preferences are for today and how to communicate that message.
So, go ahead. You want to say something?
Well, I think it's interesting to have a conversation about Republicans in this kind of post-gay marriage era. So what the court ruling has essentially done has taken that issue for many off the table. So we know that young voters really, by and large, are not either support gay marriage or they're not interested in making it a central campaign issue. And now that it's legalized, it has kind of taken a little bit of the wind out of the social conservative sails. So you see somebody like a Ted Cruz that can't really stand on that issue or stand up against gay marriage on that issue anymore because it's, at this point it's effectively moot. So, I mean, and I think that has thrown a different dynamic into this campaign.
It does, and I think it does. It's going to be difficult for Democrats to rally around an issue that gets those young people out around stuff like that. Like, I think it's brilliant that you point that out.
An email has come in, and another piece of news is just to talk about a bit with Republicans is they have a debate coming up in less than a month, their first debate. But now they're like, what is it, 20 candidates? They're on the Republican side. They're going to have to exclude some out of necessity. I mean, they can't get everybody up there to have a debate. It could take days.
If it takes days, I'm all for it. I'm for inclusion, not exclusion.
But how do you do that? I mean, whoever isn't included.
By the way, is Rick Perry still in the race?
Yes, he is.
No one has mentioned his name. Not this entire panel.
Oops.
No one has mentioned his name.
Poor Rick Perry. But this is, Clarence just wrote in. Money will protect its own interests. Those elites whose business interests cross all, ultimately behind the scenes, reach an agreement, shape the media narrative, and put up the money. The Bush family is a rock in that group.
Hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I don't think anybody here would disagree that the media narratives are really important for driving these presidential campaigns. I think an interesting person to bring up, especially in the context of race in the Republican Party, is Bobby Jindal, who at one time was supposed to be this rising star that could perhaps bridge a gap between racial and ethnic minorities in the Republican Party. But he just it's been a tough go for him in Louisiana over the last couple of years. He's had his approval ratings plummet. The Louisiana State University education system, which I admittedly am a product of, I'm an LSU PhD, has lost a lot of money, and it's really problematic. And so I think a lot of that has really kind of stolen his shine among Republicans.
And speaking of Indians from the South, I think it'll be interesting to see if Nikki Haley arises as sort of like a last-minute Sarah Palin vice presidential candidate, because the Confederate flag vote will be taken, I think, later today or tomorrow, and it's fairly certain that the Confederate flag will be removed. And her early support of it being removed, I think, is going to put her in good stead as a vice presidential candidate, particularly if you have Hillary Clinton at the top of the Democratic ticket, so that they have a woman and they have a brown woman.
Let's not forget that Carly Fiorina is also running for president.
California's Carly Fiorina.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And like Rick Perry, no one's talking about that.
So,
and they're not talking about her because they don't need to, and they shouldn't be. Like, honestly, she's more of a political hack than anything. She already, like, is a regular guest on Fox shows. Like, she hardly ever says anything that matters. I find her
like every other politician.
What'd you say?
Like every other politician?
Like every other politician. Well, you might have a point there.
Can I say one thing in defense of Carly Fiorina?
She has executive experience?
No, it's not that. It's that she has business experience, and that is one thing that is appealing to a lot of the Republican electorate. I know that Donald Trump, I shouldn't have said it, but he does as well, but she has, I think, this business experience without the baggage that Trump brings. But again, nobody's paying attention. I just wanted to say the one thing in defense of her.
So, you know, if you look at this, as we conclude, that thing about the general election, which is way far away, but let's assume for a moment that Hillary Clinton gets a Democratic nomination. And who she picks as running mate is very critical.
Mm-hmm.
And I call it the Maryland syndrome. Even though we had an African-American running for governor, he did nothing to appeal to black and brown voters in the state or to progressive white voters. And they stayed home in droves. which is one of the reasons why we have there's a Republican governor in the state, because people stayed home in five of the counties that switched. And could that happen in this election if she doesn't pick a Julian Castro or somebody like that as her vice presidential nominee, if she goes the traditional route and picks a white man?
I would say that Democratic voters are very reliable on a presidential year. They'll vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yes, but the question is whether or not they will be galvanized out and vote, particularly those who are less likely to vote. And to that end, I know that I would be less likely to go out to vote for her. And that says a lot. You know, one of the things that Obama had going for him is that, like, he literally, I think there was this whole Pookie meme that went through his campaign where he would tell people, call your cousin Pookie to get him to come to vote. And Pookie represented, in black communities at least, a cousin who was sort of somebody who was just, like, not interested in politics,
right.
Didn't really know anything,
right.
Sat on the couch looking at TV. But if you could get Pookie to vote, because now Obama is running and they see that, wow, there's a black man running for president, he could actually make it, that galvanized entire communities. Gay people were galvanized around him. Latinos were galvanized around him. And so I think that's why she needs a Julian Castro on the ticket with her, because she just does. That's the new reality of the American political spectrum.
Maybe.
Maybe.
And I think that it would certainly strengthen a ticket with a Julian Castro. But let's not forget that we think about African-American voters and Latino voters, that there are a lot of women, the African-American voters.
Oh, yeah. And she could pick another woman. That would be huge.
She could pick another woman, or just in and of herself will attract many women from all different races to vote for her in a general election.
And we didn't talk about poor Jim Webb, who just got into the race.
Mm-hmm.
Why I always found there's an interesting human being, an interesting person to interview that I've done in the past, an interesting thinker. And he's put his hat in the race, and we see where that could pull, because he's definitely not going to go, because he's mixed bag in terms of his positions, progressive and very conservative. Vietnam vet, former Assistant Secretary of the Navy, former senator. So he's an interesting candidate, always. But where he goes, we don't know.
He's the kind of candidate that certainly ties up swing states, really would help Hillary Clinton in a Pennsylvania and in a Virginia, certainly. How well he would do, I mean, even in a state like Colorado, perhaps.
Well, this has been fascinating. Of course, we'll be doing much more of this in the coming months, of these next 60 months, as we look at these races coming down and see where they end up going. Dr. Malia Cromer, it's great to have you in the studio at last.
Thanks.
Good to have you here, and look forward to having you back and hearing what your polls tell us at the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center. Phil Tran, always good to have you here for the second time. Great to have you in the studio.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for bringing your parents to the studio today. Glad they're here with you. And Edward Wyckoff-Williams, my good friend, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, buddy. And when we return to this conversation, I would like us to consider what African-American women might Hillary Clinton possibly run on the ticket with. I think Karen Bass from California would be a great choice, but that's just my personal opinion.
Well, let's get into that next time. We'll do that again.
Yeah,
we'll do that.
Let's talk about it.
The next couple of weeks, we'll bring you back on, and Malia's shaking her head yes. We'll bring her on with you, and we'll have this conversation.
Excellent.
Good to have you all here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
We're taking a very, very brief break here, and we're on the way out. We're hearing Waterfalls by TLC, which started a 7-week run at number one on this day in 1995. And speaking of music, the Duggars in the house coming up. We're going to do a little music talk and more. So stay with us. We'll be right back.